I am an artist living in beautiful Vermont, USA, and I have a lot of questions. So I engage the minds of the people that I meet, poets, writers, artists. I explore what's inside and share it with you. My name is Ricky McEachran, and I am eager to know. Hey everyone, welcome to Eager to Know, and I am excited to introduce my guest, who is from California but lives in Dummerston, Vermont, Simon Miller. Simon, welcome to Eager to Know.
Thank you for having me here, sir. I'm eager to be here.
All right. So we met in the most random way. Yeah. I am actively looking for a space for my next art show, and I guess you were moving out of your salon in Brattleboro, and I went in to look at it as potentially a space for a show. Not going to use that space because great space, but the lighting wasn't good for me.
Yeah.
And we started chatting, and next thing you know, we're chatting, and I'm like, this guy needs to be on the podcast.
That's awesome.
So now I know you have a, you call it your studio, but that is where you make your money in creatively, which is doing hair.
Yep.
Is that accurate?
Yeah. I've been cutting and styling hair for 20 years now.
All right.
So I cut everyone's hair and style too. Yeah.
All right. Now, when did you get interested in hair and you went to beauty school? When does that happen? How does that happen? Was that a passion? Was that like, I don't know what else to do, I'm going to do that?
I never thought I was going to do hair. Okay. I didn't grow up playing with hair.
Okay.
My mother actually went to a beauty college when I was in high school.
Mm-hmm.
And I used to skateboard to that beauty college. And when she was going there and have girls like braid my hair and stuff.
Okay.
And so when I went to beauty school at 19, it was with the same teachers that had taught her, which was pretty cool.
Okay.
And it was on her suggestion. We're really similar. And So I started doing hair then, and it was pretty much, I think it was the first month when I was in school, this artist came named Kelly Cardenas, and he came to give a presentation, and he walked in and he looked like someone from The Matrix. He was dressed in black and he was cool, and right then I was like, I fell in love with education and being in front of people and presenting. So that was that bug bit me then, and so throughout my career I always had this handle on education, teaching people, inspiring, sharing information, all of that. The second half of my career, I went to salons and I taught inspirational classes, foundational cutting, things like that. I took that globally. So I was with this amazing team, a company called KMS, and I traveled to different countries and I taught classes and did videos and all these things and shared inspiration with hairdressers. When I left that role and kind of have allowed things to evolve, what I've realized is I'm working a lot more with clients now and helping kind of bring their inspiration out and creativity out. And I'm doing that through, you know, listening. I think one of the most impactful things you can do when you cut hair is listen to somebody and pull that out of them and you know, find what they want to represent themselves as and actually help show that to the world. It's pretty amazing.
Okay, I have so many questions for you. Now, when you were traveling with this company, was it a product that they sold or something?
So we created products. I got to work with a R&D team in Darmstadt, Germany.
Like colors, coloring products?
This,
or what?
So the overarching company did colors. We focused on styling products, hairsprays, gels, pomades, things like that.
Okay. Now, when you talk about going and inspiring people, I know nothing. I don't have hair. I don't get my hair cut. What does that mean? To inspire people?
So, first of all, with a hairdresser, how do I inspire a hairdresser? Maybe it's through techniques. Maybe it's through showing them how they can create art in their world. When I have a client in my chair, how do I inspire them? It's listening to them. It's showing them. It's so hard to explain. I find that just creating a really open atmosphere is enough to push people into this really amazing place. I shot a pilot for a TV show, a few episodes called In the Chair with Simon Miller. And the concept was interview people while they're getting their hair done.
Okay.
And so I had like...
I would watch that.
Yeah, it was cool. I had actors in the chair and I would cut their hair and I'd show clips of their work. And, you know, the idea is like once someone sits down, all this stuff starts to come out. We talked about that a little bit earlier. Like some of that, it's almost like therapy, you know, and creating that open environment for them, I find, creates this really, you know, inspiring atmosphere.
You mentioned a reality show. Yeah. Tell me about that. Like, where did that happen, and what was that experience like?
Yeah, I had an amazing opportunity to co-own a production company when I was in New York called The Crooked Fringe. And we produced a show called In the Chair with Simon Miller. And that was the concept. It was... when people sit down and they feel comfortable, they open up about things that, unless you're there to experience it, you probably wouldn't even realize some of the stuff that we get told. And so that's what we did. We got a couple actors, a comedian, we got an author, a blogger, and we put them in the chair, and a couple of them I gave haircuts, a couple I did styles on. And basically, once we sat down and put the cape on them and start talking, all this truth started coming out. And even in front of a crew of 15 people, you know? And so I think what happens is, I think the confidence of touch opens people up.
Interesting, the touch.
Yeah, and it's taken, you know, again, I've done this for 2 decades, you know? 20-year-old me had a different experience doing hair than 40-year-old me. And the confidence of touch, you know, how I approach someone, how my hand touches their shoulder or puts a comb in their hair. And I think anyone that's gotten their hair cut, you kind of know instantly if someone knows what they're doing or not.
Okay.
And when you feel safe and secure, and I've even taken it one step further and worked with my therapist on ways of de-escalating anxiety. So a lot of times if someone sits down and they're feeling anxious of a space, I'll turn the chair around and let them explore the space and notice that it's a safe room. And once I can drop the walls, then the honesty starts coming out. I'll give you a really quick, you know, I tell stylists this, if you sit down in my chair and I say, tell me about your hair. And someone will say, well, I'm growing my hair out. And what you'll notice is the first place they touch usually is what they're most concerned about.
Okay.
So if I'm growing my hair out, maybe I'll grab it and hold on to it. Or I'm growing my fringe, don't cut my bangs. You know, and this, all these like, you start to read all the signs. And I often know what to do to your hair by less of what you're telling me and more of how you're just sitting there. It's amazing.
It sounds like you probably have learned a lot about people in general. I mean, obviously, in 20 years, just living life, regardless of what you do, you're going to learn about the world and people. But I feel like this was an opportunity for you to see individuals, almost like a therapist, in a unique way that teaches you about humans.
Absolutely. And traveling internationally took that to a new level for me because, you know, I had an experience in, I think it was Singapore. I was doing hair in front of 2,000 people and I had a microphone on and you're telling a story. And
so you're like demoing a product or
something?
Oh yeah.
So imagine on stage for 3 hours, I have 6 models and I have hundreds of hairdressers watching. And so there's this like, it's part fun. I have my buddy Adam traveled with me a lot. We had a DJ on stage. I mean, I did a stage in Stockholm that Skrillex played the night before and I had 500 people. I mean, it's just crazy. But doing that, like you realize we all spoke the same language of hair, of creativity. And I was able to get my point across these people without even having to speak the same language. Mm-hmm. And so that taught me how to speak, you know, almost like from my heart. And I've taken that and now I feel like I can connect with just such a broad spectrum of people now. It's unbelievable.
So when you kind of removed the voice and it became more about
the artistic connection that was sort of a new way for you to connect with people moving forward?
Yeah, I was doing this show in Hong Kong, and there was a Japanese artist there who didn't speak a word of English. I didn't speak a word of Japanese. And he was a barber, and he was doing a fade with clippers on the back of the head while I was cutting the front of this model. And so we were doing this big pompadour, and we were working together. We never shared one word together, and it was all just from nods and smiles. And we did the coolest haircut on this guy.
If someone had told you that you would be able to effectively work with someone without being able to speak the same language before you experienced that, what would you have thought?
I would have thought they're out of their mind, because it doesn't make sense, you know, like what playing field are we on?
Right.
And then you realize, oh, the love of this thing, whatever
it
is.
Right.
You know, I think that's the same with musicians and everybody. And it's so special to kind of find your kindred people and get to work, you know, from that.
It's interesting. I have something that's unrelated to creativity, but I dated someone who was from Brazil. And he took me to spend a week with his family in Brazil and stay at that home with him. And his mom, his dad, and his brother did not speak a word of English. So I thought, how am I ever, because I'm a talker, how am I ever going to connect with these people? How am I going to understand them if we can't talk? And what I realized is after that time spending with them, I knew exactly who they were.
Yeah.
I completely understood their personalities and the spirit of them. We didn't speak any words.
Yeah.
And it was really shocking to me that a lot of what we communicate to each other and how we get to know each other has, obviously words are a big part of it, but it is, a lot of it is nonverbal and it's non-language.
Yeah. Going back into hair, like, you know, what is hair? You know, do we wear it as a way to hide, or are we wearing it as a way of celebration? And neither one's right or wrong. You know, it's how do you want to show yourself to the world? Do you want to be subdued? Do you want to be outgoing? And all these things start to dictate, like, you know, how to present to people. And it's all nonverbal. You know, if I want to open a face up, you know, if I want somebody, I'll watch somebody walk into a room, a new client, and notice how they hold themselves. Are they open? Are they shut in? And I can add face framing with layers to either open a face or close a face. If someone feels like they have a wide neck, I can do haircutting techniques that slim a neck or open. And so you think of all these things, and it's like, I hate when people say, well, it's just hair. Well, no, it's not just hair. It's a defining thing for us. Even if it's nothing, it's a defining thing. This is a way we show up. And I think there's so much strength with it that, I could go on and on about that.
Of course. I'm sure you could.
Yeah.
It's very interesting. This conversation reminds me a lot of conversations that I've had with tattoo artists.
Oh, yeah.
Where it's about, you know, it's an intimate relationship that you have with something. Of course, with tattoo, it's more permanent. But also, it reminds me of a conversation that I had with a jewelry maker recently. And he talked about how jewelry is a way of sort of telling the world who you are. And so what you were just saying about, some of what you just said reminded me of that. Let's talk about some of your other creative outlets. And I know that you're into other creative things besides just hair.
Yeah.
And also you're a big self-taught guy.
Yeah. It's funny because I'm so into education within hairdressing. I myself am very self-taught in many ways. 20 years in the industry, I've learned some amazing mentors.
Mm-hmm.
In my other mediums, guitar, I paint, I do fabric art. I'm 100% self-taught and all that. So I don't know if I'm that good, but it doesn't matter. For me, I think that the challenge with hair being an art form is, at the end of the day, I still have to make you happy.
Mm-hmm.
So canvases, yarn, my guitar, it allows me to mess up. And I think that sometimes if our creative output is a service, we have to be careful that we're not limiting ourselves to explore. So I find that, like, when I need to break out of a funk or a writer's block, you know, I'll buy a bunch of canvases and just, like, mess them up on purpose.
What do you use? Are you an acrylic or oil?
I like
oil?
Acrylic. I like spray paint. And then I've been toying with, like, collaging. I bought a bunch of old National Geographic books, and I've just been cutting up pictures and
nice.
Adding those. And,
nice.
What I've been really into is really thick. Is it gesso or gesso?
I think it's gesso.
Really thick gesso and doing, like, layer on layer and layer of texture on white. And I've actually, it's funny because a lot of my paintings I do a punch needling technique. A lot of it kind of has a nod to hairdressing. And I think,
of course, it's going to come out.
Yeah. So even in that, the gesso, it's like I have these, I actually use hairdressing combs and create really cool lines. And
now, what do you do with your, the,
with all the stuff?
All the stuff. What do you do with it?
It's hidden in my house.
Right. Okay. So this is one of the drawbacks of creating, because I'm an artist, I'm a painter,
yeah.
Is as you're learning, as you're doing, you generate all of this stuff. And I mentioned before we started recording that I'm taking piano lessons.
Yep.
And one of the things about piano, there's so many things that I appreciate, but one of the things I love about it is I can practice, and I walk away and there's nothing left. It just goes into the ether. And I think it's just so great.
With hairdressing too, I sweep it and then I'm done.
Because if I'm working and learning new things, yeah. I generate all of this stuff, and it kind of weighs you down because is it good? Is it not good? What do I do with it?
Yeah.
At least for me. I mean, I get weighed down by it, but
recently like got rid of 90% of my clothes. I've just like decluttered my life, but the one thing I can't declutter is my studio because I have to have one of everything, and like,
of course.
I can barely walk in it. And I love that.
Now let's talk about guitar. How long have you been doing that? And you just self-taught?
I got my first guitar when I was 13. My dad bought it for me, and I was playing that guitar today, actually.
Did you ever take a lesson?
Never.
Never took a lesson. Yeah. Now, were you doing chords?
I play all of it. Yeah. You know, it's taken a long time for me to find my sound, but it's so fun. And again, my dog's my biggest fan, so she hears me more than anyone.
Oh, that's awesome.
But I'm trying to get the nerve to go do an open mic in Brat. We'll see. Yeah.
Well, we have open mic
here too. Yeah,
we have one in Saxons River at Main Street Arts, the fourth Friday of the month, and we're coming up on our third one. The first two were huge successes.
Were they cool?
They were incredible.
Awesome.
Not only was all the performers were awesome, but they were also extremely diverse.
Oh, cool.
We had all different types of people, but so we can talk about.
I'm going to do it one day. I'm telling you.
All right.
Act surprised when you see me up there.
All right, I will totally be surprised and very supportive.
Yeah, awesome.
But you mentioned that you were interested in taking piano.
Yes.
Are you like seriously thinking?
Oh, yeah. I've already done research. I thought like, so.
And why piano?
I was watching, remember that band from the 90s, Ben Folds 5?
Yeah.
So Ben Folds, I was watching a video and he was with a big orchestra, and he was doing live composition, and he had a whole horn section. He was composing live, and he was doing it with piano, and he'd walk over and hit a chord.
Mm-hmm.
And the level of like freedom of creation I saw that he was using with that piano really wanted to jump on to.
Yeah.
And I thought because I'm self-taught with guitar, it might be really cool to be formally taught on a piano.
Yeah.
Anything with my hands, that's what I like.
Yeah. You know? So I'm learning. So I purchased a guitar, and I did not realize how difficult it was to like the physical finger was really brutal. So I haven't been practicing, but I talk to musicians all the time. And one of the things that's great about piano is, first of all, you can hit so many notes at a time. Also when you hit the note, it's accurate.
Yeah.
Whereas with other instruments, you know, flute, whatever or even cello, you're not guaranteed that it's going to be 100% accurate.
Yeah, that's
so you
cool.
So you do have that. And then you also have, I think we have 12 octaves, on the piano, so
and it's there, right there. You don't have to adjust for it, you know.
Correct.
Yeah.
I think it's incredible, and I believe it's a great way of learning music theory, mm-hmm. because you have, because you can play chords, yeah. and you have such a wide range of octaves, and it's kind of pretty easy to get around,
yeah.
If you will.
You know, I think too with adults, it seems like at some point we stop like challenging ourselves, and I think it's so good to do something that you suck at a little bit and get better.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so often we find our five things that we're good at, and then mm-hmm. we stay there.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like it's fun to fail.
Well, you know, it may be for you. For a lot of people, the idea of trying something new. So someone who is very close to me, mm-hmm. I mentioned that I was taking piano lessons, and I asked them about had they ever learned music, and they said, "Yeah, well, when I was a kid, I couldn't read the notes." And I'm like, "Well, yeah,
that's
you
like
learn,
hard,
you
yeah.
or you learn, you yeah. learn. Like nobody knows how to read the notes.
Yeah.
It's like saying when I started learning, you know, I don't know French because when I started to learn it, I didn't know all the words.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's very hard to learn totally. Anything, and you have to go through this phase where it's really uncomfortable,
yeah.
and you have to stay with
it. The dexterity. I was teaching, a brand new hairdresser, and she was getting so frustrated. And I said, "What's going on?" She goes, "I can't cut a straight line." And I said, "That is the hardest thing in hairdressing.
Mm.
When you think about it, this hair's moving, it's wet, it's all these things happening. To cut a straight line is one of the most difficult things. And it's like you said, like the dexterity of holding a cord, that just that muscle takes time to build up.
Absolutely.
And it's like, it once you get past that, you know, and I think that's with all art forms. There's this part where it becomes intuitive. And I think we owe it to ourselves to find that if we're in love with an art form, to get to that point where you stop having to think about what you're doing and it just starts to come out.
And then the creative part can come out.
Yeah.
Because when it becomes less about the worrying about how to do it, you can just do it. And then the creative part of you takes over.
Yeah.
And
that's where those happy accidents happen.
Yeah.
That's where all that stuff, when you're present enough to allow that, you know, you're not locked on a result, you're in the mode. And like, I think that's where the most brilliant things come from. That getting to that point where it's like, it's almost like your soul or something is talking. You know, that's what art is. When art is flowing through us, and I call myself an artist, not a hairdresser, and it's more of an aspirational thing, I think. I've always thought of myself as an artist, and I think that, like, you know, true art is inspiring, and it's also like a language within itself. And when we're able to just like allow the creation to come out of us, there's something pretty special that happens. And it's you feel naked when you look at it, and you feel, you know, there's this vulnerability that comes with it, and also a strength at the same time. And yeah, it's pretty addicting.
Simon, I know that you spent a lot of, you're from California, and you spent a lot of your time in San Francisco. Now, I have only been to San Francisco a couple of times, and it's definitely one of the most unique cities that I have ever been to, not just the way it looks. And well, I'll tell you, the thing that I thought about it the first time I ever went there, I thought, someone had this great idea of finding one of the most beautiful spots in the country, and that's where they built the city.
Yeah.
Because even if the city wasn't there, it was absolutely beautiful. And I'd never seen a city that had such incredible views. But then also there was a spirit about San Francisco that was really unique. Now, I haven't spent a lot of time there. So what do you want to say about like living there? I mean, that's a big question.
Yeah.
So
yeah, well, this is because of San Francisco.
Okay.
Like when I got there when I was 21, and it was like, I was blown away. I met the coolest hairdressers in the world. I worked with some of the most talented people ever. And what I learned there was like how to be myself and San Francisco helped. That's where I started teaching. That's where I learned how to do hair. That's where I learned how to talk to people. That's where I became an adult, I feel like. I have a lot of love for that city. I think it's changed over the years. It's been a while since I've been there. But I was living in the Mission. I worked on Haight Street. I mean, it's just the vibe of that place. And I don't want to go back, but I look at my time there and I'm beyond grateful for it, you know? And it was...
Those are formative years. Like, yeah. You learned how to... kind of formed how you saw the world as an adult.
Sure. And I screwed up a lot. Yeah. I mean, that's where I made a bunch of mistakes and and what an amazing city to do it in. And, San Francisco is only 7 by 7 miles. And when you think about how much goes on in there, it's an addicting place. If anyone hasn't been there, I would highly recommend going there. And like you said, it's one of the most beautiful places, in the world. I love it there. Yeah.
Good. Well, Simon, thank you so much for hanging out with me. I'm glad that we ran into each other randomly in Brattleboro, Vermont. Yeah. And if people are interested in checking out, your studio is called?
My studio is called Rust Tonsorium. Tonsorium is Tonsorium. Rust is actually the last name of my best friend who passed away a couple years ago, so I named my shop after him. You can Google Rust Tonsorium, Simon Miller Hair, you can Google that, and I have some old videos on YouTube and stuff like that. But yeah, if anyone's in Guilford, come in, get a haircut. I'd love to see everyone.
All right. Well, thank you so much.
Thanks, Rick.
My name is Ricky McGeckran, and you have been listening to Eager to Know, the podcast. If you haven't already, please go to Apple Podcasts and subscribe, rate, and review this podcast. Join me next week for another Eager to Know podcast.